You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com, your everything resource for the security industry. Hello and welcome to SIW Radio. This is your host, Jeff Cole, editor of SecurityInfoWatch.com. And this week we bring to you Episode 8 on the topic of RF technology and privacy. We feature two interviews this week. The first will be with Randy Vanderhoof, who is the Executive Director of the Smart Card Alliance. And the second is with Kathleen Carroll, who is the Government Affairs Director for HID Global, the company that creates the iClass cards, as well as on such companies as Fargo Electronics and others. The topic, of course, being RF technology and privacy, addresses such concerns of RFID, RF technology as used in smart cards, and then the general concern that's been going around the nation as perpetuated by a lot of misinformation, I'd say, in the consumer media, that someone can, with a clandestine reader, can simply walk up and, you know, scan you from afar and get your information, whether it's off your passport or off of your smart card. And this is slowed adoption of RF technology to some extent across the nation, and it's certainly an issue that security systems integrators and security end users themselves, the corporate security director community, will face as they look at implementing these technologies. So we put the questions to Randy and to Kathleen of what is being done on that topic. Just this last week, the Smart Card Alliance released a document of best practices for adoption of RF technology as it relates to privacy concerns. And this is obviously a topic that Kathleen works with on a regular basis, covering the news out of Washington, out of all the state legislatures, of laws that might impact the smart card industry and the RF technology industry. So we're going to turn it over to an interview I did last week with Randy Vanderhoof first, and talk a little bit about their best practices document and what they're seeing over there at the Smart Card Alliance.
One of the questions that's really coming up is why is RF technology getting such a bad rap that it's been getting lately in the consumer press as being a source of privacy issues, a place where people can steal your identification, and is that legitimate?
Well, there's a lot of interest in RFID technology as a whole, and the challenge has been that there isn't a lot of information out there that talks about the different types of RFID technologies and the types that are being recommended and applied in the government space for human identification has a whole set of security capabilities to it that differentiate it from other forms of the RFID technology more commonly used for tracking packages and pallets and in the supply chain. So there are potentials for means for reading RF identity cards that could lead to the potential for personal privacy or information that could be used for illegal purposes. However, it's not a limitation of the technology as much as it's a study of how the technology is implemented and which technology choices are made in order to ensure that security is maintained and personal privacy is protected. And one of the goals of the Smart Card Alliance is to be an educational voice to the industry so that people understand that there are lots of types of RF technology, some more secure than others, and that we've tried to identify what the differences are so people clearly understand that it's not all or nothing. And then secondly is to develop a set of best practices so that issuers who think about or are issuing RF-enabled technology can follow a guideline of good behavior so that personal privacy and security are not at risk when RF technology is applied.
Let's kind of take it from the top and group these technologies for Security InfoWatch listeners. Let's start with RFID tags, again, commonly used in the supply chain. What, in terms of what security do they offer, or do they offer much security, and what do they protect against?
Yeah, RFID tags are really synonymous with barcode technology. They're typically a static identifier that's easily read, sometimes from great distances, with a limited amount of data capacity to communicate their basic information. Comparing that with RF-enabled smart cards, which are intelligent devices, they're more synonymous with a wireless PC. So if you think in terms of two wireless PCs in a room talking to each other, you wouldn't imagine that one PC would be able to spy on the other unless the users of those PCs presented certain passwords and mutually authenticated each other before information could be shared between them. Well, that capability is built into RF-enabled smart card technology. That capability was never designed for RFID tag technology because it was primarily designed as a technology for products and packages, not human identification. So there's a strong value and need for both technologies in the marketplace. But we advocate that whenever human identification is involved, that issuers should look to more secure forms of RF-enabled technology and look at RF smart cards rather than the static RFID tag technology that's available in the market as well.
And our industry obviously has been picking up on the smart card initiative for many years. A lot of very prominent vendors now offering different multiple technologies for smart card RF transmission. In terms of what we've been able to deliver, should today's smart card for access control and perhaps network identification be a security concern for employees or for corporate security departments?
Not at all. You know, security is a layered effect. So you have to look at security as a system and not think of it simply in terms of one particular aspect of it. So we've all evolved from in the physical security space from having, you know, issued physical keys to then cards that had machine-readable data on them, whether it was embedded in the mag stripe or incorporated into a Prox technology for reading that information. And the reason for moving into those more machine-readable forms was because they increased the level of security. While taking the next level of maturity of the technology and moving from barcode, magstripe, and Prox technology to smart card technology adds even more layers of security, such as being able to store longer characters for identification purposes, supporting biometrics, adding PIN capability, having information built into the card that requires it to authenticate the user before the information is passed to the reader. These are basic components of a smart card for physical security that go above and beyond what the legacy systems in the market offered. So for someone to say that putting smart card technology into the security space is creating a security problem, I challenge that and say compared to the legacy systems that are out there, it's addressing security problems and raising the level of security. And security is always going to be measured by the business rules and what you're trying to protect. And therefore, not every capability that exists in smart cards are needed or are going to be deployed in every environment. But that's a business decision that the security officer and the corporation, or in the case of the government agencies, need to evaluate in terms of what do they need to protect the assets and the personnel within their facility.
And I guess it's very important to note that the data on these smart cards for access is entirely encrypted in most cases, unless they've done something very wrong.
Right.
And that compares back to some of the Mac stripes where there was no encryption at all and it would simply read off a employee ID number that really could have been accessed or sort of reswiped from the card and stolen that way, correct?
Yeah, exactly, and that's why what we put in our best practices document and the frequently asked questions portion of that document is to explain that we really feel that you should go beyond simply putting a static identifier on a card, but also incorporate other security technologies such as encryption, such as mutual authentication before the card talks to the reader, verification of the message or the integrity of the data that's on the card before releasing the information, and even incorporating biometrics, which is the only proven technology to bind the credential to the credential that it was issued to. So these extra capabilities are means in order to raise the level of security from what people had perceived for many, many years as being an adequate level of security without those capabilities. So we really have stepped it up with the new advances, and it will become the wave of the future.
And I noticed in your best practices document that you list a few of the applications using RF smart card technology. One of them, of course, is the new e-passport from the U.S. government. And interestingly, yesterday a press release landed across my desk from an off-the-wall company who was selling small passport protectors. I assume this was some sort of lead barrier, so the idea was that someone couldn't walk up beside you with a handheld reader and swipe the information off your passport. Is that really even a threat?
No, not the way the U.S. passports have been issued. The Department of State evaluated some of the concerns that were raised by the privacy advocates about the secure application of identity documents with radio frequency capability. Several of the features that they built into the electronic passports to protect citizens from that type of risk were that they put a shielding built into the physical passport itself. So the cover of the passport, when it's closed, effectively eliminates any communication of the radio frequency chip that's embedded inside of it. If the passport is opened and therefore the radio frequency chip is exposed, the information inside the chip is protected and effectively locked with a key so that only an authorized reader device that can encrypt or decrypt the code that's printed inside the physical passport can be used in order to read the electronic data that's stored inside that chip. So the electronic passports have proven to those people who raised those early concerns that they've taken, you know, significant steps in order to protect the information that's inside. And any issuer, any companies that are promoting technologies to go beyond that, I think are going to find that there's not going to be much of a market for it.
Security InfoWatch obviously covers the security industry closely, and we don't pay as close of attention to what's been going on in the payment card market with the
right.
With the Visa check cards and MasterCards.
Right.
What's been happening in that area, Randy?
Well, the same secure RF technology that we're seeing in electronic passports and in government ID badges and commercial badges has also been incorporated into new payment card technologies. Those contactless or swipeless credit cards that you hear being marketed under the PayPass brand, as well as American Express, Express Pay, Visa has their Visa contactless products. There's now somewhere between 11 and 13 million new credit cards that have been issued that have incorporated this technology, primarily to provide speed and convenience at the checkout for the users, but inherently in that technology are additional security measures so that the cards cannot easily be skimmed, where people would read the account information from the magnetic stripe and then replicate that card and sell that information to thieves. All of those security risks have been mitigated by having the information inside the chip that generates a unique one-time code each time the card is presented at the point of sale. So same technology, applied in the payments industry, utilizing different system-wide security measures than are built into the physical access world, but the same principles apply in terms of having the data that's stored inside the chip, that's protected, that the cards are authenticated to the reader, and that the information can't be easily copied or replicated.
So I guess the point here is that a lot of the security concerns that are coming out really aren't an issue yet. Perhaps if higher level hacks occur, then these might be of issue, but at this point we're very stable, it sounds like, in security.
Well, I think, security is always under the scrutiny of the public, particularly in the media. So whether there's a actual risk or a perceived risk, that kind of news is going to get people's attention, and editors are typically going to write about that. What has been frustrating for us in the smart cards industry is there's been so much confusion about the use of the technology, the security features that the technology supports, and some of the system security measures that are built into the overall security of the programs, whether it's a payment system or a travel card or a passport or identity card, that it really doesn't lend itself well to a quick little soundbite that says, there's nothing to fear. It really requires a more detailed explanation and understanding of how the technology works, which is not what is typically going to be reported. So, bad news sells. Bad news is easy to communicate, and people will listen to it and react to it. And then when people in the industry who know more about the technology try to explain away some of the bad news, often that information doesn't get reported or doesn't get communicated well. And that's part of the role that the Smart Card Alliance is trying to serve by putting these types of resources on our website, making them publicly available, doing an outreach program to the media and to legislators and other influencers to make sure that they have accurate information. So when one of these stories comes across their desk, before they react emotionally, they take a second look and maybe validate some of the assumptions that are made so that public statements aren't made that are not supported.
Very good that you guys are doing that, and I should mention to our listeners on this podcast that the link to the Smart Card Alliance's RF Technologies Best Practices document is available on Security InfoWatch. You can also go to it directly at www.smartcardalliance.org/resources/pdf/rf_technology_best_practices.pdf. So, well, thank you, Randy, for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me on, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Again, great thanks to Randy Vanderhoof of the Smart Card Alliance for sharing his thoughts on this very pressing topic for our industry. Kathleen Carroll over at HID Global, again, handles the government affairs and tracks legislation for that corporation. She's in the thick of things, so to speak, and we asked her to talk a little bit about what she's seeing, not only in terms of legislation, but also in terms of that issue altogether and how it's really being portrayed in the consumer media. So here's our interview with Kathleen from last week on SIW Radio Episode 8, RF Technology and Privacy.
Can you kind of walk me through across the U.S. and across Capitol Hill what's happening in terms of legislation that's affecting smart cards and RF technologies these days?
Sure, there are a couple of different states that have legislation that is that has been introduced, and they're trying to get it to the next level. For example, the state of Washington has introduced a bill, House Bill 1031, which takes aim at radio frequency technology. It specifically names that, but it also encompasses any other kind of machine-readable technology. And there it just tries to, that bill is, suggesting that any type of system, whether it be a retail system or a security system that uses, machine-readable technology has to, there are some some things that hold on a second here, this dog is barking. Manager or user of those technologies would have to implement. For example, the bill would require that any kind of a system that, you know, like, for example, if an employer issues an access control card to an employee, and that access control card, you know, uses radio frequencies or uses even like a swipe card, magnetic stripe, that employer would, number one, have to label every card handed out to an employee. And say that this, you know, card contains or uses radio frequency or whatever the technology is, that the employer would also have to get written consent from the employee for them to be able to read that card every time that the employee enters or exits the building.
Now, would they be able to make a blanket agreement, you know, when you sign something, sign a waiver when you get your card, or are they asking for a signature and acceptance every individual time?
Well, that we are actually working with the congressman right now on the language in the bill, because and that's a problem that I've seen with a lot of legislation across the country. There is a very real lack of understanding about what the technology can and can't do, and a very real lack of understanding about the workings of the technology. So, you know, for me, like, that's like the number one critical thing that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. What are some of the myths that are out there in the consumer world? I, in our industry, I think from going to trade shows, you know, reading articles on these topics, I think people are fairly comfortable with, you know, smart card access and, you know, RFID. But in the consumer world, what are some of the myths and fears about this technology?
It's very interesting to me that you asked that question. HID was, we were just participated in the Congressional Internet Caucus Tech Fair, which was held on Wednesday. And at that tech fair, we demonstrated our smart card technology. In addition, one of our sister companies was there, and they actually manufacture readers for the new e-passport. And so we had a passport there that had a chip in it, and we had people come up and, you know, ask us about it. And one woman came up and she said, "Oh yes, I've heard about these, but I'm so worried. What about if I'm in a crowd? Somebody's going to be able to read my e-passport." And so that's like a common myth. People think that, you know, if they're walking around with their smart card or with their credit card that has the smart card technology in it, or their e-passport, which is again a smart card technology application, they're concerned that just anybody is going to be able to have a reader and read that card or that passport. So that's a really big myth out there, a misperception. And, you know, what I would like to say to people about that myth is that there's a lot of confusion between the technologies that exist that use radio frequency waves for communication. So, for example, RF tags, RFID tags that are used for retail applications for asset tracking are all often confused, and you know, they're all put in the same bin as smart cards. The problem with that is that they're all very different. And just to give you an example, cars, motorcycles, tractor trailers, boats, even lawnmowers all run on internal combustion engines. That no one would ever confuse a lawnmower with a tractor trailer, nor would they take a lawnmower out to deliver, you know, huge quantities of product to a store. They would use a tractor trailer. So if you look at the different uses of RF technology, it's kind of the same thing, and maybe to help consumers understand it, you know, to use that analogy, an RFID tag used for asset tracking and smart cards used in credit cards, access control, identity credentials, they both use radio waves. That's where the similarity ends. RFID tags contain a simple memory chip that has no processing capability whatsoever. The data on that RFID tag is static, and the tag simply responds to a query by a reader and sends back a fixed serial number. Smart cards, on the other hand, contain a microcontroller chip, something called a cryptographic microcontroller, that is much like a microprocessor in a computer. These cryptographic microcontrollers contain specific hardware as part of the engine to carry out cryptography and mutual authentication. That ensures secure communications between the card and the reader. And that's where the disconnect comes, like in the consumer's mind. They're looking at it, you know, all of these technologies as one monolithic technology, when the reality is that, yes, they all use radio frequency waves, but that's where the similarity ends. And just like, you know, the lawnmower and the tractor trailer and the boat, yeah, they all use internal combustion engines, but that's where the similarity ends.
When this gets down, you know, to the corporate security manager's level, and he or she is developing a card access program, you know, maybe going from a key program to a state-of-the-art system, using the kind of technology that your company delivers, what are some of the things that they should do to address the concerns of their employees? And you have any tips on that?
Sure. First of all, from a privacy perspective, anyone, any employer, anybody who implements a system that uses radio frequency should first of all conduct a privacy impact assessment. And what that would do, and this is before you even, you know, do anything, a privacy impact assessment would take a look at what kind of system you're going to use, what kind of data you're going to collect, how that data is going to be used, where that data is going to be stored, and how you're going to protect that data that is stored. So that's the first thing. You need to look at all the privacy implications before you even implement the system. So that when that security manager goes to implement that system, to design that system for his or her building or facility, they already know where there might be privacy concerns, and they can address those concerns before the system even gets, you know, put in place.
Kathleen, what are some of those privacy concerns that might come up on a corporate security manager's radar?
Well, actually, we've been in business for a long time, and we've got, HID Global has more than 250 million credentials in use worldwide. We have never had any experience of any privacy concerns or issues that have been raised with the systems. That being said, I think a key reason is that for most of the access control applications, it's security applications, the cards that employees would use to enter and exit the buildings don't contain any personal information whatsoever. And so they'll just contain a unique number that goes back into the database, and that's where any personal information would reside. So I think that's why I said, going back to the privacy impact assessment, you know, if a facilities manager or security manager, you know, looks at implementing a system, you know, and wants to be, you know, protective of their employees' privacy, the first thing is do you need to put any personal information on that card? Do you really need it? And in most cases, you don't. In most cases, all you need to do is just to ensure that, you know, that card and that person match, and that, you know, that the number on the card you know, if you need to have personal information, is in the database that is in a secure area that is protected both physically and cryptographically.
What about match on card type applications? Does that start to present a little bit more of a challenge because you're talking about, you know, perhaps presenting a smart card that maybe has a biometric template, you present your finger, and it matches to what's on the card. Are there issues that are arising from those type of designs?
There could be. And there, if you are going to put a biometric on a card, then your security precautions in terms of the communication protocol between the card and the reader should be much higher. And I'm not as familiar with that aspect of the, you know, once we get into the biometrics and all, but I would say that there is a higher level of concern for privacy if you're going to include a biometric on a card.
Gotcha. Well, Kathleen, you guys are obviously, you know, you're very active in educating, you know, the politicians, our representatives, you know, in Washington and other states. What is being done from the industry right now to help educate the consumer population? You know, obviously when we talk about this, in a way we're preaching to the choir because, you know, our audience is integrators and corporate security directors who see this technology all the time and, you know, understand it. But what is being done to really convince, you know, Joe on the street who's, you know, just hearing about this emerging technology and is worried about it in terms of his own, you know, personal privacy issues?
Yeah. I actually don't think that industry has done a very good job. I think that privacy advocates have been, and starting back, I think, in 2003, when the first, they tried to do the first RFID deployment in a retail application. The privacy advocates started to jump on this, and they have been very vocal. They have been very vocal in the media. They have, you know, they have websites, and they go out on the talk show circuit and, you know, promote books about, you know, the danger of the technology. And unfortunately, many of those folks who are doing that, those privacy advocates who are doing that, they themselves don't have a clear understanding of the technologies and the differences in the technologies. And again, they, you know, I have met them in the course of my travels at the state legislative level, and actually have been in discussions with some of them, and they clearly don't understand the differences between an RFID tag that is used for asset tracking and a smart card that has, you know, this microprocessor chip on it and, you know, has all these security features embedded in the card. So, you know, so in my opinion, and I think many others would agree, industry has come late to the table. The privacy advocates have been out there for a couple years, and it is just, it seems like it's just in the last year or so where the industry has started to, you know, wake up and say, hey, you know, we need to address the misperceptions, the myths that are out there.
It's always our pleasure to have a couple of the industry's leading experts join us on SIW Radio. Again, a very big thanks to Randy Vanderhoof and to Kathleen Carroll for joining us on this episode. On the landing page for our podcast series, www.securityinfowatch.com/podcast, on this episode you'll find a couple links to further reading that you can do on the subject. And I do hope you do spend some time researching this topic and thinking about how you can discuss it yourself when this question comes up, because we all have to be evangelists on this topic in the industry. And I think that our industry has really been doing a lot of things right. We've made sure that, you know, the smart cards and the RF technology can be encrypted and is encrypted. And again, I think it's one of those things that security is often mislabeled as Big Brother, and, you know, that's probably because of the proliferation of surveillance cameras. But I think what we really have to stress is that the security industry, looks at the technologies and looks at the security of the technologies itself, whether that's the security of a network video transmission or the security of the private data, whether it's someone's biometric or their employee ID number that's contained on a smart card, I think we really look at that security as being just as important as the security of the entire business itself. And so I think privacy has always remained an issue for our industry. And again, we need to be the evangelists of that to the consumers and to the public at large. Again, thanks for joining us on Episode 8 of SIW Radio. And stay tuned to SecurityInfoWatch.com for the latest news and information of the security industry.